August 1st, 1972. The San Diego Padres were in Atlanta for a doubleheader against the Braves. At 6:05 p.m., Ron Schuler delivered the first pitch of Game 1. Shortly after midnight, the last pitch of the night was thrown. In between those two pitches, San Diego's Nate Colbert came to the plate 10 times, hit 5 home runs, and knocked in 13. A night for the ages. Next, on Sports Forgotten Heroes, one of the game's most feared sluggers and a forgotten star, Nate Colbert.
This is Sports Forgotten Heroes, a tribute to the stars who shape the games we love to watch and the games we love to play. Stars who provided us with many thrills, but when their time was up, they faded away. We'll take a look back at their spectacular careers, their moments of fame, even if it was just for one season or just one game. And now, here's your host, Warren Rogan.
Welcome to Sports Forgotten Heroes. So glad you can be here. Joining me in just a moment on today's podcast will be Bill Swank. Bill is a terrific author. He's written several books about baseball, the San Diego Padres, and is regarded as San Diego's preeminent baseball historian by the San Diego Historical Society. Also joining today's podcast will be Mike Ursary from the East Village Times. You know, if you listen closely to the open of the show each week, Sports Forgotten Heroes pays tribute to players who might have had a great career, or one great season, or just one incredible game. Well, today's podcast concentrates on a guy who sort of fits each of those categories, depending on how you look at it. You see, Nate Colbert is the all-time leading home run hitter in the history of the San Diego Padres. So, did he have a great career? Well, smacking 163 home runs for one team does not make for a great career. But in the annals of the Padres, that's more than anyone. Did he have just one great season? Well, his best season might have been 1972 when he was an All-Star and finished 8th in MVP voting. He hit .250 with 38 home runs and 111 ribbies, but he did way more than that. We'll tell you about that in just a moment. And those are pretty darn good numbers at a time when pitching really dominated the game. Did he have one great game? Well, he had one heck of a night, that's for sure. On August 1st, 1972, in a doubleheader in Atlanta against the Braves, Colbert walloped 5 home runs, one of which was a grand slam, had 13 RBI, scored 7 runs, and had a record 22 total bases. Absolutely incredible. Not only will we talk about that day, but we'll discuss just how good Colbert was during his career for one of the worst teams ever assembled. First, though, thanks to Henry R. and Jack K. for their continued support of Sports Forgotten Heroes. To show your support, please visit sportsfh.com or our page on Patreon at patreon.com/sportsfh. That's patreon.com/sportsfh. You can find out how to become a supporter of the podcast, ask questions, and more. Follow Sports Forgotten Heroes on Twitter at SportsFHeroes or look for the Sports Forgotten Heroes page on Facebook. And if you have any questions or comments, please visit sportsfh.com. Back to Nate Colbert. He was originally signed by the Cardinals in 1964, was drafted by the Astros in the Rule 5 draft in 1965, spent 3 years in the Houston organization, and then was taken by the Padres in the expansion draft prior to their first season, 1969. And the Padres weren't good. In 69, they went 52-110. They followed that with records of 63-99 in 1970, 61-171, and 58-95 in 1972. In fact, it wouldn't be until 1978 that the Padres would sniff 500 when they went a very respectable 84-78. And it wouldn't be until 1982 until they would reach 500 again, going 81-81. Yeah, they were bad. And of course, with the Dodgers and the Angels not playing too far away, being a fan of the Padres wasn't easy. But they did have a big, powerful star to root for, and his name was Nate Colbert. Now, with much regret, I tried to contact Nate and bring him on the podcast to talk about that great day he had. Sadly, though, I did not have success. I just couldn't locate him. However, Bill Swank covered the Padres for years and remembers Nate well, and joining us now is Bill Swank.
Glad to be with you.
Now, before we get into that magical day of August 1st, 1972, can you tell me the kind of ball player that Nate was and just how powerful a hitter he was?
Well, I think he was a bit of a surprise. He wasn't even the starting first baseman in 69. And it took a while for him to work his way into the lineup. But it became apparent that he was a power hitter. I mean, he was hitting better than I think, certainly, you know, they drafted him from Houston. But even you look at his minor league numbers, they didn't jump out at you, but neither do Roger Maris's minor league numbers or Hank Aaron's. So some of these men, they just develop into sluggers, and the man really was a slugger. Colbert could really hit that baseball.
And he played on some really poor, really bad teams. Some historically bad. Just how bad were they? And how much more significant did their poor play make what Nate did at the plate during his years in San Diego even more impressive?
Well, there wasn't a whole lot to cheer for with the team that was losing as much as it was. So when someone like Nate Colbert came along, he was the man, and he was the fans loved him, and he was responsive to the fans. Things were different back then. There was more accessibility to ball players, and Nate just had one of those outgoing personalities, and he was the star of those early Padre teams. You know, he was an all-star, I think, 3 years. But he was definitely one of the leading power hitters in baseball. Remember, I think it was 68. I think it was the impossible dream year that Yastrzemski batted 301. He was the only guy in the American League to even hit over 300.
Sure.
So it was a pitcher's game back then. So Colbert was he was playing in a time when the pitchers were more dominant. Than they had been.
And that brings up my next question. One of the most incredible statistics that I read during my research about Nate Colbert comes from the 1972 season. And to me, this shows just how good he was. The Padres, it was a strike-shortened season, so the Padres went 58-95 that year, and they had a team batting average of just .227. In the lineup, along with Nate, was LaRon Lee, and he was second on the team in RBIs with 47, and Cito Gaston, who was also on the team, had only 44, and that was third best on the team. As a team, the Padres scored only, get this, 488 runs. Nate Colbert drove in 111 of those runs that year. And he scored something like 87 runs that year. He was responsible for almost 25% of the runs scored by San Diego. That says a lot about how good Nate was. How in the world was he able to do that? And why didn't opposing pitchers pitch around him?
Well, I'm pretty sure, you know, that, as you said, the percentage of runs batted in to runs that were scored by a team, I think that set a major league record. Yes, it was incredible. Why didn't pitchers pitch around him? I just had lunch with Bob Chandler. I don't know if you recognize the name. Bob was the broadcaster for the Padres, partner with Jerry Coleman for years. And, one of the things that Bob said was, I asked him about that. And I said, I asked him about, because I knew, that we were going to be talking. I asked for some of his memories about, what we'll be talking about, the great day that he had in August 1st of that year. But Bob said he couldn't understand why the pitchers just didn't pitch around him, because he was the guy that could drive in the runs, but I think it was just they were just that disdainful toward the Padres. They knew they were going to beat them.
Unreal. So in 1972, he knocks in 111. He hits 250, cranks out 27 doubles, blasts 38 home runs. Five of those 38 home runs came in one day in a doubleheader on August 1st against the Atlanta Braves. Nate Colbert hit two home runs in the first game, three more in the second game, knocked in 13 for the entire day, and had 22 total bases. When I first contacted you, you said you remembered that day. Tell me about that day.
I've been trying to piece together exactly where I was coming from, because in my memory it was on a Sunday, but I think it was on a Tuesday, and I was working. I got off work at, I think, 2 o'clock in those days. Mm-hmm. And I was driving home on Interstate 5. And so I really wasn't aware of what had happened, because we're 3 hours different than the East Coast.
Sure.
And Nate was coming up, I think, for the last time, and they were saying how, you know, he'd already, you know, the Padres won the first game. I think it was a shutout. And he had two home runs, and he'd had two home runs in the second game. And I think he's coming up for the third, in the last game.
Right.
And he hits the other one, and I thought, wow, this is really something. And the Padres won that game. So, I mean, in addition to winning two games, which didn't happen very often, it was just unbelievable that this man could hit five home runs in a doubleheader. And I'm glad that I happened to catch it, because when you're working, sometimes you miss things.
It was an historic day for sure. San Diego won game one of that doubleheader 9-0. In the first inning, Colbert hit a 3-run shot off Ron Schuler, and in the seventh, he hit a solo blast off Mike McQueen. For the game, he was 4-for-5 with 5 ribbies and 10 total bases. In the nightcap, San Diego won again, 11-7. And for the Padres, winning two games in one day was quite the rarity. In the second inning, Colbert smacked a grand slam off Pat Jarvis. In the seventh, he hit a 2-run shot off Jim Harden. And in the ninth, he hit a 2-run shot off Cecil Upshaw. That's 12 total bases, another 8 RBIs. So for the day, that's 5 home runs. Incredible. 13 ribbies, and a major league record of 22 total bases. He faced 5 pitchers and hit a home run off each of them. And for those home runs, he took the pitchers deep on the first pitch he saw. And on the other home run, he went deep on the second pitch he faced. I also read where he barely missed 2 more home runs by inches on balls that were barely foul. Mike Ursary from the East Village Times also remembers the games.
His first at bat was a 3-run home run. So right off the bat, he's already got a home run, 3 RBIs. His next at bat was a single. He drove in another run. He also had a grand slam that day. You know, he already has 5 home runs in a day, but.
What makes it even more remarkable to me is the fact that, at least as the story goes, when he was a young boy, he was sitting in the stands with his dad in St. Louis on the day that Stan Musial hit 5 home runs.
That is really amazing. You know, we all once were kids, and we all have idols that we looked up to. And we all have said, one day I'm going to do something like that. But Nate Colbert actually was there to watch Musial do it. And he told his dad, he said, one day I'm going to do that. And, you know, 18 years later, he did it.
In fact, in an article about that day written by Bob Wolf, which I found in the LA Times, Colbert is quoted as saying, Stan was my idol after that day. Now when I see him, he says, hey, we're the only ones to do it. Musial's big day came on May 2nd, 1954. In the first game of a doubleheader against the then New York Giants, a 10-6 Cardinals victory, Musial went 4-for-4 with 3 home runs and 6 RBI. In the second game, a 9-7 Cardinals loss, Musial went 2-for-4. His two hits were home runs, and he totaled 3 ribbies for the game. Overall, Musial went 6-for-8 with 5 home runs and 9 RBI and 21 total bases. Now, 26,662 people were in attendance, and as the story goes, two of those people were Nate Colbert and his father. However, Swank debunks that story just a bit.
When you're a researcher and a historian, and you go back, and because I did the early history of baseball in San Diego back in the 1800s, and there's some pretty far-fetched stories, and I think there could be a little embellishment, and you know, and telling a good story is real important, and you know, for Nate to be in the stands when Ted Williams, because when Stan the man, you know, it could have happened. I'm just a real skeptical guy. That's what I'll say. But I know, you know, Stan Musial was a very gracious man, and you know, I know there was some, you know, there, when they celebrated it, when I think the, you know, when the Cardinals came out, mm-hmm. and I know that they reported that, that Nate Colbert got a Cadillac Eldorado.
Now, whether or not Colbert received a Cadillac Eldorado is another story that Swank questions. But what no one questions is how bad the Padres were. And because they were so bad, Colbert played in relative obscurity. Even in San Diego, very few showed up to see him play. In fact, in San Diego's first season, the Padres drew just over 500,000 people, or 6,333 per game, at a time when NL teams averaged over 1.2 million fans per season. In 1970, San Diego drew just under 650,000 fans for the year, and in 72, they fell back to just over 550,000 for the season. During the course of Colbert's 6 seasons in San Diego, the Padres averaged just over 595,000 fans a year. Outside of San Diego, hardly anyone knew him. And in fact, after the 1973 season, with attendance just so paltry, the team was going to leave San Diego and head across country to Washington, D.C. The Padres just struggled at the gate. They couldn't bring people in. They were financially strapped. So
yeah.
I read where there was also a period of time that it was thought that the Padres were going to leave town and go to Washington, D.C.
It wasn't just thought. They were sold. They were on their way to Washington, and they even had a friend of mine was a photographer for the team, and I have a picture, and as far as I know, it's really the only one in existence that he took of Dave Friesleben wearing a Washington uniform. It just said Washington on it, and there was a star on the hat. They were going to be called the Washington Stars.
Wow.
So they were sold, I think, to an East Coast grocer or something like that. And there was some problem. And the commissioner's office said, this can't go through. And then Ray Kroc, the founder, he's considered to be the founder of McDonald's.
Mm-hmm.
He bought the team. And when he told his wife, "I bought the Padres," she said, "Why did you buy a monastery?" So she didn't even know they were a baseball team. And he was a very colorful guy. You know, you mentioned at the start about the Padres having to compete against the Dodgers and the Angels. I guess you were implying for attention and for
yes,
you know, for fans. But
sure.
You know, San Diego doesn't like L.A. L.A. like San Diego. I'm just talking about in general. You know, everybody in L.A. wants to come down to San Diego because it's such a beautiful spot. And, you know, they have benign to positive feelings about San Diego, but San Diegans don't like L.A. And so playing the Dodgers is always a highlight.
Right.
And beating the Dodgers, I mean, the Padres have really traditionally done pretty well against the Dodgers.
Interesting.
I don't know. Where am I going with this? What was your question again?
Well, we were talking about
the Padres. You start talking baseball, and you never know where it's going to go.
We were talking about the Padres.
Oh, yeah, about Ray Kroc. Right. Ray Kroc. Let me tell you a quick story. Kroc buys the team. It's opening day. This is 74. And they're playing Houston. They're playing Houston. The bases are loaded. And I think, it was Colbert was at bat. And he pops out. That's one down.
Mm-hmm.
There was one out and he pops out. And then the guy on first base gets picked off. Ray Kroc, he'd gone up to the booth, the broadcast booth, and he's holding on to the PA system. He's talking. And he says, "Well, I've got some good news and some bad news. The good news is that we outdrew the Los Angeles Dodgers on their opening day. And so the fans cheer." And he says, "And the bad news is, this is the stupidest baseball I've ever seen." And the fans cheered. Well, that did not go well with the players, needless to say. And it didn't go well with Major League Baseball. Because you don't want the owner getting up and saying these things. That same day, you're aware of the San Diego Chicken?
I am, the KGB Chicken.
Yeah, he's a great, greatest mascot ever. That was the first time he made an appearance. He was just a college kid. He was wearing a little different chicken outfit for radio station KGB here in San Diego. And so that was, he made his debut that day. And then, while Kroc is talking, a streaker runs across the field.
Oh, my.
And so Kroc, get that guy. And he's yelling. And I mean, the fans are just loving it because it was clear that this was a man who cared about, about baseball in San Diego. And even though they were still terrible, I think that was the year that they drew 1 million fans, which was just unheard of. So Ray Kroc really saved baseball in San Diego.
How tough was it for the players to play previously before Kroc came in, knowing that the team was on its way to Washington, D.C.? How did that affect the psyche of the players?
Well, in 73, I could remember going to what I thought was the last game. And there weren't many people in the stands. And it was like, it was like being at a funeral. We didn't know that they were going, but it was pretty obvious that C. Arnold Smith had run out of money. And so the Padres had to go.
Right.
And there were a lot of people who said, "Great, bring back the old PCL Padres. At least they'll win some games." So people didn't feel as bad about it as they should have. And I remember feeling bad, and I just remember that feeling in the stands that night. It was, it had to have an effect on the players, and losing all the time has an effect on the players. I mean, these guys, they may be professionals, but they're out there to win.
Right.
And the Padres were god-awful, no question of that.
Getting back to Nate, during the four-year period of 1970, 71, 72, and 73, he averaged 31 home runs a year.
Yeah.
Like you said, he
yeah.
was an all-star three times. He was the face of the franchise. And to this day, he is San Diego's all-time leader in home runs with 163.
Yep. I don't think Nate Colbert is known very well outside of San Diego. But, they instituted the Padre Hall of Fame
right,
in
just
1999.
Recently. Okay.
And Nate and Randy Jones and Ray Kroc were the first three members. Colbert, was the franchise, and he's been back. He was here last summer for the All-Star game. He doesn't spend a lot of time in San Diego, but he knows that he was. Beloved in San Diego.
Do you think the Cardinals or the Astros at the time regretted not protecting him? Because he was drafted by the Cardinals,
and then I'm not clear on that. I thought that Houston drafted him. Well, it doesn't matter, but yeah, any, you know, if it was the Cardinals or Houston, yeah, they wish they'd have kept him. That, there's no question of that. But I don't think, you know, I don't think anybody expected him to be so powerful. Oh, one quick last one I want to tell you.
Sure.
When San Diego Stadium was built, it was 330 down the lines, but there was a wall that was 19 feet high.
Wow.
And so it was hard to hit home runs in San Diego. So, and I think it was in 72 when he hit 38 home runs. Now, again, these are stories that might be apocryphal. And I think it was Whitey Wiedelman who said that, you know, that somehow, because Whitey kept every, he had a scrapbook when he died of every Padres box score.
Wow.
He was a great fan. And, but Whitey claimed, you know, Whitey died 10 years ago, but it seems like he told me that year that Nate hit the wall, you know, 17 times.
Holy smokes.
And I think it was 84 when they brought in to make it a more hitter friendly. And that was the year the Padres won the NL championship. But they brought a fence in, and I think it was 327 down the lines, and it was originally, I think, 420 to center, and they brought it into about 405. And it was kind of, as I recall, it was kind of, you know, the chain link fence, but pretty solid. And then they put palm trees in the space. They'd had palm trees down at Lane Field down on the bay, and so I liked the effect of the palm trees. And, of course, then they were able to hit more home runs. So it was, you know, after they brought the fences in, if Whitey's reasoning was that if he hit the wall, which was 19 feet high, if he hit it 17 times, playing 10 years later, that had 15 home runs to his total.
Yeah.
And that would have been 55 home runs. And then how many balls were caught right at the wall? You know, I don't think he kept, but I mean, you know, this is the game that gets played, you know, in baseball. What if, what if, what if?
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, the Padres, Sparky Anderson was on the original coaching staff, and he's, you know, enthusiastic guy. And I think it was, in the early 70s, he's the manager now of Cincinnati. And he claimed that the Padres had you know, one of the best offenses in baseball. They didn't hit for average, but it seemed like I'm not a real stats guy, but I think this is right. I think in 1970, they hit 172 home runs, and they hit, but only 104 of them, most of them were hit on the road. They only hit 68 at home.
Because it was just too hard to get over that fence.
Yeah. And I think one of the things, because in 1980, they only hit 29 home runs at home. And so that's why I think that motivated them to move in the fence, because it's just too hard to hit home runs. And, you know, the same thing happened down at Petco. And, you know, the pitchers were complaining everybody would come in, they'd hit home runs, and the Padres couldn't even hit home runs in their own ballpark, you know. So they brought the fences in there, you know, and they, let's face it, baseball today, it's not the game it was in the old days when if you hit 20 home runs, you were a power hitter.
Yeah, no doubt.
Now, we're past the steroid era, I think, but it's a game that gets changed by home runs, and the fans love it, so that's... You know, people that don't think baseball's changing don't know what they're talking about. It's changing all the time.
Sure it is. You know, his final few years in baseball, they weren't great, and it's not because of a lack of ability or talent. Tell me about that. What happened to Nate Colbert?
Well, he hurt his back, and his numbers really dropped off in 74, and so, you know, the Padres traded him, and he was done. He was finished. And then, you know, that happens. You know, guys get hurt.
Yeah, I heard it was some sort of a degenerative back condition.
Yeah, and back.
So if you had to sum up the career of Nate Colbert, how would you do it?
He was a great slugger. He was obviously an unappreciated slugger. And I guarantee you, people that know anything about baseball in San Diego know how tremendous he was. He didn't hit for average, but boy, he could hit the ball a long way. Very powerful man. And a good guy.
That's great to hear. Hey, tell the fans of Sports Forgotten Heroes what you're working on now and where they can see all you have written.
Well, I write for a local newspaper here, but I just wrote a column about forgotten Little League fields in San Diego, and the response was really great because people have so many memories of Little League, and so I had fun with that. I've written 10 books. Most of them are about baseball.
Uh-huh.
But the last one I did was about Christmas in San Diego. My editor said, you don't know who I am, what I look like, but I'm Santa Claus for Christmas on the Prado, which is San Diego's big celebration. And so my editor said, why don't you write a book about Christmas? So I wrote a book called Christmas in San Diego.
Interesting.
And that's the last book I wrote. And I got a picture in it of Tony Gwynn wearing a Santa hat. And when they eulogized Tony, Vin Scully referred to Tony, he said, if I can think of one word to describe Tony Gwynn, it'd be jolly. And Ted Leitner, who's still the broadcaster, I think it was Ted, he said, Tony Gwynn was Santa Claus. So I thought it was a good analogy because everybody loved Tony and Tony loved everybody.
That's nice. Bill, I want to thank you so much for taking time out of your day to join me on Sports Forgotten Heroes, and I hope you would consider coming back again sometime in the future.
Yeah, this was a lot of fun. Thank you, Warren, and I wish you success for your program.
To find out more about Bill Swank and what he's written, check out sportsfh.com. Colbert's career was shortened by his bad back. After his 163 home runs for San Diego, he bounced around a little more. He was traded to Detroit after the 1974 season, was purchased by Montreal midway through 75, and signed as a free agent with Oakland midway through the 76 season after the Expos had released him. For his career, he hit 173 home runs with 520 RBI and posted a batting average of .243. But that one day in Atlanta, he was as great as they came. Only Stan Musial rivaled what he did. Thanks again to my guest Bill Swank and to Mike Ursery for joining too. For more information on Nate Colbert, please visit sportsfh.com. Follow Sports Forgotten Heroes on Twitter at SportsFHeroes or look for Sports Forgotten Heroes on Facebook. Next time on Sports Forgotten Heroes, we'll take a look back at the career of the only pitcher ever to win back-to-back MVP awards, and he almost made it three in a row. We're talking about Hal Newhouser. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time on Sports Forgotten Heroes.